Hey, Mike here. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to Dark Poutine early and ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. You're about to listen to a historical episode of Dark Poutine. After episode 149, you will find Scott is no longer with the show. In an effort to maintain continuity and offer listeners as many episodes as possible, we are leaving the episodes in which he co-hosted intact. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Heather from the Left Behind podcast. You're listening to Dark Poutine, a podcast about Canada's creepier side, with hosts Mike and Scott.
Thanks to Heather from the Left Behind podcast for that intro. We'll link to your show in our show notes. Yeah, Heather's from Nova Scotia too. Welcome to Dark Poutine. I'm Mike Brown, creator and host. With me as usual is my good friend, co-host, sound guy, and actual toque wearer, Scott Hemenway.
I am today wearing a toque.
He is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Say hello, Scott.
Hello, Scott.
Okay.
Yeah, lame.
Let's get to it. Dark Poutine is not for the faint of heart or squeamish, as our content contains mature themes, harsh language, and graphic descriptions of violent crimes. Listener discretion is strongly advised. What you are about to hear most likely took place in Canada, but if not, it will include Canadians. We're not experts on any of the topics we present, nor are we professional journalists. If you're looking for impeccable research and well-written content, CBC News or Globe and Mail might be a better bet. Put on your toque, grab yourself a double-double, and an Nanaimo bar. It's time to scarf down some dark poutine. Welcome to episode 15 of Dark Poutine. Gilbert Paul Jordan was a serial killer from Vancouver who used alcohol as a weapon. Have you heard of him, Scott?
Nope, not until this podcast.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Jordan is alleged to have murdered at least 9 women and attempted to kill another 4 between the years of 1965 and late 1987. Most of his crimes took place between 80 and 87. Hmm. Well, most of these crimes, we'll see, he did a lot more. Mm-hmm. He was only ever charged with one murder, and that was his last victim, Vanessa Lee Buckner. This is the story of the boozing barber. Gilbert Paul Jordan was born Gilbert Paul Elsie on December 12, 1931, to Winifred and Jack Elsie. He changed his last name to Jordan in 65. He preferred to be called Paul over Gilbert, because Gilbert's kind of nerdy, I guess.
Yep.
His mother, Winifred, was a tough-minded sales clerk. His dad, Jack, worked as a railway man, bus driver, and conductor, and later became a banker. And Jordan had an interest in finance himself, which we'll also talk about later on. Jordan and his older brother, Bud, were still children when their parents broke up. The brothers lived with Jack in Vancouver on McDonald Street so the boys could stay in familiar surroundings. Jack quickly remarried, and he and his new wife had another son named Robert. Winifred remained in the boys' lives. She was also remarried to a man she'd met in Victoria, and she lived on the island, too. Jordan's brother said that there was no physical or sexual abuse in their home, nor are we aware of any specific neglect. I dug around, and it's really hard to find anything about this guy's childhood. Mm. So we don't know why he became the thing that he did, but he was definitely a thing.
Yeah.
So neither of Jordan's brothers ever got into trouble or have any evident history of drug or alcohol abuse. Jordan did, though. Around 70% of serial killers have a family history of substance abuse. Jordan himself was an alcoholic, so it follows that there may have been a history of alcoholism in his family, perhaps a generation or two removed. Neither of his parents were alcoholic.
Interesting.
Yeah. Jordan, who was an antisocial, had a tough time making friends and was short and stocky. Some of his schoolmates called him Chub or Chubby.
Well, that'll do it right there.
Well, I mean, they called me Beaver Cleaver and Woodchuck because I had buck teeth. I have not killed anybody that I'm aware of.
I think you'd be aware.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't see these buck teeth anymore.
No. Had them fixed.
Oh. Like, yeah. You just like get a file?
No, mom and dad.
Oh, they got a file.
It was a hammer. No braces. By 16 years old, Jordan was an alcoholic and had dropped out of high school. He drank daily to maintain his buzz. He was also known to go on booze-soaked benders lasting for days. Hmm. Gilbert Paul Jordan's criminal record dated back to July of 1950 when he was 18. His first conviction was for the theft of a car, for which he received a 12-month sentence. So we're off to a good start.
Yeah.
We're just an adult and now we're in jail.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Get started.
Not all of his crimes before the murders were petty. In 1961, an RCMP officer found a 5-year-old girl of indigenous heritage with Jordan in his car at a local gravel pit. And there's no word of what was going on in that car, but yeah, Jordan was charged with abduction, but he was not convicted. The court stayed the proceedings in May 1961.
Interesting.
Just after Christmas that year, Jordan drove to the middle of the Lionsgate Bridge, left his car, climbed onto a ladder on one of the bridge towers, where he threatened to jump. Traffic was snarled for hours. Now, North and West Vancouverites dread hearing police incident on the radio when they're coming to or, you know, leaving work.
Yep.
Because there's only two ways into Vancouver. It's either the Lionsgate or the Second Narrows Bridge. So if there's a jumper on one, everybody's going to the other. But at this point, the Second Narrows Bridge was not open. It didn't open until 1968. So This was the only way to North Van. So the commuters were probably pretty pissed with this guy.
I guess far less traffic than there is nowadays. But yeah, like the second you start hearing about, I remember working at my old desk, I had a good view of the Lionsgate Bridge.
Yeah.
And you could tell if something was going on because it like just traffic, you would not be seeing traffic move. Yeah, and it could be like that for hours.
So eventually his criminal attorney arrived on scene and talked him down off the bridge. Jordan didn't jump. Very sad about that.
Tragic.
On March 3rd of 1962, Jordan lured a pair of women from Vancouver's downtown east side into his car. He had booze and he knew they wanted in on it. And he wanted them. Mm-hmm. He probably thought that was a fair trade. Jordan loved drunken sex, and it's said that he was drinking as much as 50 ounces of vodka a day, even when he was working.
Damn.
I don't know how anybody can actually do that.
No.
Jordan drove the pair to Cole Harbor, and I guess Cole Harbor wasn't the nice place that it is right now. I think it was all, like, more industrial at the time.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
They drank vodka in his car there. When one woman got out of the car to be sick, Jordan sped off, leaving the woman stranded. But her purse was in the car, and so was her friend, the other woman. No. I guess one is easier to manage than two.
Sure.
So it was alleged that Jordan drove to North Vancouver and raped the remaining woman. On April 6th, 1962, Jordan was appearing in North Vancouver to be charged relating to the theft of the stranded woman's purse and the rape of the other. As the charges were being read, Jordan raised his arm in a Nazi salute and yelled, "Heil Poole," that's the presiding magistrate, Judge Poole, "Heil Neil," I don't know who that was, I think it was the prosecutor, and "Heil Puppeteers," whoever was pulling the strings and out to get this fine upstanding gentleman of excellent repute.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody but him.
Yeah, not his fault.
No, he's a good fellow.
He's a pawn.
Yeah.
Judge Poole was not amused and found Jordan in contempt of court and sentenced him to 6 months in the slammer on the spot.
Good.
Jordan was held until his preliminary hearing on the theft and rape case. He was acquitted of the rape charge, most likely due to the combination of intoxication, ethnicity, and perceived character and reliability of the victim. This would be a story throughout. He was convicted of the theft, however, because I guess that's easier to prove, and he was sentenced to 2 years in prison.
Charming.
Yeah, sounds like a fun guy.
Yeah.
Oh, it's about to get a lot more fun here.
Oh, good.
So on January 17th, 1965, Jordan picked up an English-born switchboard operator, and her name was Ivy Rose Doreen Oswald. The pair went to a cheap motel where Jordan checked them in for a night of drunken sex. The next morning, Ivy was found nude and dead in the room.
Ew.
Jordan admitted to having been with Ivy when she died, and he had some of her belongings with him when he was later picked up and questioned by police. An autopsy revealed Ivy's blood alcohol content to be 0.51%.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's pretty high. Yeah. Although Ivy was not known to be a heavy drinker, she had surpassed the 0.31 to 0.45% where death can occur in a case of alcohol poisoning. In fact, typically with a blood alcohol content between 0.16 and 0.30, the average person may lose consciousness. So somehow Ivy had kept drinking well past that mark.
Interesting.
Inexperienced drinker. Yeah, interesting is right. However, Ivy's death was ruled accidental and no charges were filed. A night of hard partying had been a bit too hard.
Is that their belief?
I guess. It was only 4 days after Ivy's death that Gilbert Paul Elsey applied to have his legal name changed to Gilbert Paul Jordan, which he did. So I wonder why he did that.
Oh, not at all trying to
avoid guilt for anything?
Yeah.
No, of course not.
Just he liked the sound of it better.
Apparently.
It flows. It flows much better.
Yeah. Anyway, a fresh name didn't keep him out of trouble. Over the years, Gilbert Paul Jordan had been convicted 9 times for theft and another 5 for drinking and driving, as well as other things. Mm-hmm. In 1969, he got 2 drunk driving charges in 1 day.
Yeah, what an upstanding fellow.
I don't know how you do that.
Part, 1969.
Okay, but still, so you get drunk.
Yeah.
You get arrested. They just let you out back onto the street that same day, and you go pick up your car where you left it?
In 1969, would they have even arrested you for driving drunk?
Well, it says that he was, convicted, and he got 2 drunk driving charges in 1 day.
But charges don't mean arrested. Like, they could have just,
means arrested.
Not just a ticket or something?
Maybe it was.
But that's what
it was like a 24-hour suspension or something.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Anyway, it just keeps getting better for this guy. He sounds like a fun guy.
Yeah.
He was charged with lewd acts in a public place in 1971, but those charges didn't stick.
Of course.
A woman named Ramona Mary married Jordan in Prince George, a rough and tough logging town in northern BC in 1972. But due to his constant drunkenness, along with a sharp tongue and propensity for physical abuse, the marriage didn't last.
Sounds like a charming fellow to
me. He sounds like such a nice man. I think he's just misunderstood.
I gotta be it.
In 1973, Jordan obtained a charge of indecent exposure in Mackenzie, BC, another logging town. So he's like going showing his wiener or something in like logging towns.
Well, and not to
but
bring
again,
a joke into it, I will do it. Is there a decent exposure? Like, is that, what would decent exposure be?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's my thigh.
But guess what? Right. Those charges didn't stick.
Wow. Sensing some patterns.
Yeah. In another sexual assault, charge in 1974, surprisingly, we get a conviction and Jordan goes to jail.
Good.
Is he going to jail for a long time for rape?
50 years.
2.
Oh.
2 years less a day.
That's substantially less than 50.
Substantially. After a string of charges of a sexual nature and some other convictions, the Crown attempted to have Jordan declared a dangerous sexual offender. Well, this sounds about right.
Yeah, it sounds like the right direction.
His lawyers fought hard, and Jordan managed to avoid the designation that may have kept him in prison for a much longer period. A year later, Jordan was paroled from jail again, but right back in after kidnapping and raping a mentally impaired woman from a local mental hospital.
Holy jeez.
Yeah, so he likes people who can't fight back, clearly. Yeah, this guy's a coward, a piece of shit. His previous behavior, arrests and convictions were overlooked during the trial, and Gilbert Paul Jordan was sentenced to only 26 months behind bars. Great. In 1976, a psychiatrist named Dr. Bezzaretti assessed Jordan on behalf of the courts. Jordan was categorized as having an antisocial personality. No kidding.
Yeah.
Dr. Bezzaretti defined this as a person whose conduct is maladjusted in terms of social behavior, disregard for the rights of others, which often results in unlawful activities.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it sounds a bit on the soft side from what but okay.
Yeah. While in jail in Maple Ridge, BC's Haney Correctional Institute, Jordan was learning a trade. He took some haircutting courses, and he learned the trade of barber. He became a barber.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I guess he needs to do something. So probably just, I'll cut hair, why not?
Yeah, yeah.
So in the early 80s, right after his release from prison, Jordan opened a barber shop at 2503 Kingsway near Slocan in East Vancouver.
Oh.
It's still kind of a scuzzy area. Right across the street from a Church's Chicken that I actually drove by moments after it had been robbed. And there were police everywhere there. I was coming home from work one night. I was working a late shift downtown and driving by, and there were police everywhere around the Church's Chicken. Apparently, there'd been an armed robbery there.
Are there not better locations to rob, though?
But right across the street, that's where the Boozing Barber's barbershop used to be.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's a ballet school now. I wonder if the current occupants have any idea of its dark history.
That's kind of creepy.
Yeah. Little kids in there doing ballet and stuff.
Pirouettes, not knowing
the
occupant.
Yep.
Previous occupant.
Jordan would invite women to his shop to drink and party. He'd get them liquored up and he'd steal from them. He'd steal their jewelry and stuff. And apparently then he would sell it in the front window the next day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's like, I don't have it. I don't have it. Here it is. It's for sale.
But would you like to buy it?
Would you?
I don't have it.
Yeah, exactly.
But would you like to buy it?
At that time, he, thanks to his father being a banker, he also became interested in the stock market and investing. And invest he did.
Hmm.
He made a lot of money, too. So he became not only a drunk and a barber and a criminal, he was a rich drunken barber criminal and murderer.
The best kind.
Yeah. So he made a ton of money.
Hmm.
He could supply all the liquor he wanted to have as much sex as he liked, preying on the desperate, down-on-their-luck women from the downtown east side. Many of them were of indigenous heritage. On November 30th, 1980, Mary Johnson died in Jordan's company at the Aylmer Hotel. Her blood alcohol content was 0.34%. There were no charges. It was ruled accidental death. Barbara Paul, also partying with Gilbert Paul Jordan, this time at the Glenaird Hotel, died with a blood alcohol content of 0.41% on September 11, 1981. So that's three, including the lady in 1965. But no charges, accidental death.
Of course.
On July 30th, 1982, Mary Johns was the first to die while drinking with Jordan at his Kingsway barbershop. Her blood alcohol content was a whopping 0.76%.
Good God.
So remember, like, you're passed out between 0.16 and 0.30.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, that's the average person. Apparently, I am told that alcoholics can actually have this elevated blood alcohol content, but again, no charges, accidental death. In 1983, Maria Elvira married Jordan for 4 months. Again, drunkenness, physical abuse led to the demise of that marriage. Maria got out alive, filing for divorce after catching Jordan with another woman at their home.
Hmm.
Nice fellow.
Yeah. Ethics are a big thing for him.
Yeah. In 1984, on December 15th, Patricia Thomas was found dead at the barbershop after another of Jordan's parties. Her blood alcohol content was 0.51%.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what?
No charges.
Accidental death.
No, of course.
Of course. On June 29th, 1985, Patricia Andrew was also found dead at Jordan's barbershop with an astonishing blood alcohol content of 0.79%. That's almost
Good
10
Lord.
Times what is considered legally impaired.
Wow.
Yeah. But?
No charges. Accidental death.
Absolutely.
Good God.
So Jordan had been in trouble for some other things, and at this time he told the court that he was trying to turn his life around. Alcohol got the blame. It was Booz's fault that he was involved in the things he was, criminally and otherwise, and he said he was going to stop drinking. But did he stop?
Yeah.
No.
Oh.
He did not. Okay. Jordan met 27-year-old Vanessa Lee Buckner at a local beer parlor. Jordan and Ms. Buckner checked into the Niagara Hotel at 435 West Pender Street. They drank all night and they had sex. Jordan left Vanessa dead and naked on the floor of the hotel room and went back to his room at the Marble Arch. That's an old strip club in Vancouver where he kept a room. He called in the death, but not before he got good and drunk again. Vanessa Buckner was not known to be a heavy drinker, yet her blood alcohol content was an unbelievable 0.91%.
My goodness, that's hard to believe.
Right.
That's extreme.
Yep. So the VPD questioned Jordan as usual, but this time they put him under surveillance. 7 women had died in his company, and I guess that's too many now.
Oh, yeah. You know, they have a limit.
I guess.
There's a threshold where they're like, okay.
7 women have died. I think we better have a good look at this guy.
Let's start looking into this fella.
Yeah. Overdose deaths are common on the downtown east side, but there isn't usually a common denominator like this one in the way of the companion that these women had.
The
boozing barber.
And like a lot of the hotels and everything that we're mentioning, this area is regarded as one of the most unfortunate in North America.
In the world.
Yeah, really. Yeah. It's a place where victims can be easily taken advantage of.
Absolutely. It's the poorest postal code in Canada.
Yeah, it's a really, really...
In one of the richest cities in Canada, we have also the poorest postal code.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very tragic place.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just down there yesterday going to a concert.
Yeah. Oh, you were at the rickshaw.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a great place for a show.
I love it.
But the outside of it is not so great. Anyway, so the cops were tailing Jordan now. Surprise. Mm. I won't get into too many of the details, but they had to break into rooms 4 times to rescue women that Jordan was drinking with.
Oh, wow.
So on November 20th, 1987, at the Balmoral Hotel, Rosemary Wilson was rescued by police with a blood alcohol content of 0.52%.
Up there. Yep.
Verna Chartrand, on November 21st, a day later, at the Pacific Hotel with a blood alcohol content of 0.43%. Mm. Sheila Joe, on November 25th, at the Rainbow, and we don't know how much she had drunk. And Mabel Olson, another day later, on the 26th of November, at the Pacific again. Mm. The police recorded conversations with Jordan coaxing women to drink more by promising them money and trying to, you know, cajole them into drinking more.
Okay.
And so this is taken from a case. It's R or Regina versus Jordan. Regina means the crown in Canada. And the case is 010079. And here we go. While listening outside hotel room doors, the accused was heard to say to various women such things as, "Have a drink, down the hatch, baby, $20 if you get it right down. See if you're a real woman, finish that drink, down the hatch, hurry right down. You need another drink? I'll give you $50 if you can take it. I'll give you $10, $20, $50, whatever you want. Come on, I want to see you get it all down. Get it right down. I'll give you $50 and that's $13. I'll give you $50. I told you that. If you finish, I'll give you $75. Finish your drink. I'll give you $20, et cetera, et cetera."
Well, your voice of this predator sounds eerily familiar to mine currently.
Yeah, you are not, as far as I know, a predator.
No.
But, you know, like, here... I think that this guy was getting these women... I think he was a necrophiliac.
Yeah.
I think he was getting these women drunk to the point of almost being dead. And he didn't care whether they died or not. And he could do whatever he wanted to them. Like Jeffrey Dahmer and his victims in his way. And this is what I think this guy was up to. And whether why on earth the police were the way they were, I mean, we get into it a little bit later on, but I'm just astonished by this case.
It is quite incredible to hear. And I think you're right. He wanted, he clearly wanted unconscious women.
Yeah.
Like it's...
they couldn't tell him no.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, what was it... the little guy who used to be on The Voice.
CeeLo Green.
Yeah, him.
Yeah.
He would say, well, if they can't tell you no, it's not rape.
Yeah. Oh, God, did he say that?
He actually did say
disgusting.
That.
Disgusting. And I think, and you can kind of start to understand when you're hearing these conversations how, because when you hear like these extreme blood alcohol content levels,
totally.
You're kind of like, well... like, my God, like, did he use a funnel or something? But you can understand why
he had to be pouring it down their throats, like, well, literally.
Yes, but also you can very much imagine when he's trying to, he's, like, pressuring, like, come on, $20, $50. Like, you can imagine if he's, like, guzzle the whole thing. I'll give you $1,000. Come on, drink it all, drink it all. You know, like, I'm sure he was able to coax people into just chugging down extreme amounts.
Yep. Well, they gave up tailing him after 6 weeks.
Really?
Yep. And only 3 days after they stopped tailing him, on November 29th, 1987, the naked body of Edna Shade was found in a room at the Glenaird Hotel. She'd been in the company of Gilbert Jordan. His fingerprints were found on a bottle of vodka at the scene. An empty bottle.
Seems very coincidental, 3 days after they...
Right. Jordan was never charged for Edna Shade's death. Hmm. It is surprising that anybody would rent this guy a room or that any woman would go along with him, but...
Right?
Yeah. One would think that word have gotten on around on the street, but you said earlier when before we were doing this that he had the loot, right?
Yeah, and when you're desperate, when you are the most unfortunate and desperate and some predator comes along with loot and alcohol, you know, it's... probably too attractive for a lot of individuals.
Yep. The cops finally did have enough evidence to charge Gilbert Paul Jordan with the murder of Vanessa Lee Buckner and arrested him in his room at the Marble Arch Hotel. At trial, Jordan showed zero remorse. He claimed Vanessa Lee was alive when he had left the room that morning and he went to get more booze from his bootlegger. When he returned, Vanessa Lee was dead. Yes, they'd been drinking heavily together, but he did not force her to drink. Sober people wouldn't go out with me, so I didn't have much option, he explained. I didn't want to drink in my room all by myself.
Oh, well, then it's totally okay that you killed people.
Well, did he?
I think so.
So do I.
I think I can't say doesn't seem like first degree murder necessarily, but at the very least, many charges of manslaughter.
Yep. At the trial, there was medical evidence that Vanessa Buckner died of acute alcohol poisoning. The mechanics of death were the inhalation of gastric contents into her air passages, followed by death through a failure to breathe. Her blood alcohol reading was 0.91%, as we mentioned, and she would have had to drink about 30 ounces of hard liquor over a 12 hour period to reach that level.
Wow.
And so aspiration of stomach contents is the way a lot of alcoholics die, actually.
Jimi Hendrix.
Yep. Bon Scott from AC/DC.
Yeah.
Yep. It's on and on and on. You can look it up. But, you know... did he kill her? Guess what? The court convicted Jordan on manslaughter rather than first-degree murder, as although the Crown was able to prove Jordan was negligent in Vanessa Lee's death, they did not sufficiently prove that he had intended to kill her.
Yep.
So,
and
maybe, I don't know, did he intend to kill them?
I think my impression of him is...
he didn't care.
I was about to say those exact words.
Yeah.
He didn't care.
Yeah. He just didn't care if that person lived or died. And
his intent is to get you passed out drunk.
Yeah. And do what he wants.
And do what he wants. Whether you live or die, he doesn't care.
Didn't give a shit.
No. You voluntarily drank this.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's in his mind.
Yep. So Judge Bouck at the trial said Jordan was a predator who used alcohol as his deadly instrument of choice.
Yep.
Gilbert Paul Jordan was sentenced to 15 years in jail. So here's some significant jail time.
Yeah.
But it's manslaughter, so 15 years on manslaughter is very significant. But he appealed that twice, and it was reduced to 6 years. Jordan was released from jail in 1994. He was placed on probation with a few stipulations. He must remain on Vancouver Island. He must avoid any licensed establishments in a specific specified area they called the Red Zone. He was not to be in the company of any females where liquor was served. Guess what?
He followed these to a T.
No.
Oh.
Jordan ignored most of his probationary conditions and kept on drinking and abusing women. Jordan moved to Victoria in February 2000 and caught the eye of police right away. I'm sure they knew he was coming.
Yeah.
He tried and failed again to change his name. As a legal loophole, he wished to use Closed. So I wonder why he's trying to change his name. It's like, oh, God, only 9 women are dead. I'm going to make a fresh start.
Yeah.
Good God. This guy frustrated me, Scott.
Yeah, it's highly understandable when you're seeing death after death after death.
After an incident on June 1st, 2000, Jordan was charged with sexual assault, negligence causing bodily harm, and administering a noxious substance, alcohol. These charges were stayed for lack of proof, and Jordan walked free again on October 19th, 2000. On November 2nd, 2000, Jordan rented a room at the Port Renfrew Hotel, where he and another woman of Indigenous heritage drank first at the bar, then in the room he'd rented. She eventually just wanted to leave. Jordan tried to bribe her with $20 to stay, but she still wanted to go. Jordan was angry and tried to force her to get her to stay with him. And hotel staff had to step in to help the woman, and Jordan was heard yelling after her to give his booze back. She wasn't carrying a bottle.
Yeah, I was going to ask that.
No.
So just like...
Well, how is she supposed to give his booze back?
Vomit everything?
I don't know.
Wow.
Jordan was arrested on November 23rd, 2000 for the incidents on June 1st and November 2nd. I guess they had enough evidence now. Both breached his probation conditions. He was convicted of those breaches on April 16th, 2001, and was sent back to jail for another 15-month stint, to be followed by 3 years of probation with the same strict conditions. He continued to file appeals, because this guy didn't want to take any accountability for what he was doing. Mm-hmm. He was a drunk.
Yep.
It wasn't his fault, it was the booze.
Yeah.
He continued to file these appeals and was in and out of courtrooms and jails for similar breaches of probation in the following years. In August of 2004, another woman almost died of alcohol poisoning in Swift Current, Saskatchewan. So he was in Saskatchewan. He was supposed to be in Vancouver Island.
Yeah.
So more jail time for Jordan, but also brief.
Yeah.
He returned to Vancouver Island on his release in 2005. And on February 3rd of 2005, the Saanich Police Department, that's Saanich, close to Victoria there.
It's a nice area.
It is very nice. They issued a BOLO, be on the lookout, that is. Jordan Gilbert Paul, age 73, is the subject of this alert. Jordan is 175 centimeters tall, or 5'9". He weighs 79 kilograms, 174 pounds. He is partially bald with gray hair and gray goatee. He has blue eyes, wears glasses. Jordan is currently in the Victoria area, but has no fixed address. Jordan has significant criminal record, including manslaughter and indecent assault of a female. He uses alcohol to lure his victims. Jordan's target victim group is adult females. Jordan is subject to court-ordered conditions, including abstain absolutely from the consumption of alcohol, not to be in the company of female persons or persons in any place where alcohol is being served or otherwise consumed or possessed by persons or persons. If you observe the subject in any violation of these above conditions, please call the Saanich Police Department. So, you know, he was continually in and out of jail for the last bit of his life. And then on July 7th, 2006, Gilbert Paul Jordan died alone in his room at the Friendly Inn, a hotel in Victoria, from cirrhosis of the liver. Surprise.
Wow.
It's thought that perhaps hundreds of women had been binge drinking with Gilbert Paul Jordan while his murder spree went on between 1980 and 87.
Wow.
And he claimed to have had sex with more than 200 women over that period.
Wow.
Yep. That more didn't die is pretty much a miracle, and that nine did die is a tragedy.
Yeah, hearing 200 women, knowing his pattern and knowing how he gets them so intoxicated that they're alcohol. Like this,
how many of them had been assaulted by him and just didn't talk?
I would have to imagine that
hundreds,
at least 75%, if not more, which probably is a very low estimate, that had been abused and assaulted by him. These poor people.
So, from Harriet Fox's book, The Alcohol Murders, the true story of serial killer Gilbert Paul Jordan, Jordan never accepted responsibility, always minimizing his actions and denying he committed his crimes, saying, "I'm not a criminal, but I've got a terrible criminal record because of booze."
No, you've got a terrible criminal record because you're a terrible human being.
Right. So if you've never heard of Gilbert Paul Jordan, you're not alone. A lot of people have not. Scott hadn't heard of him before we did this.
Yep.
Jordan preyed mainly on vulnerable Indigenous women around downtown Vancouver's notorious downtown east side, which we mentioned earlier. Yeah. Indigenous women have been socially, politically, and economically marginalized in Canada and frequently subject to violence and murdered at a rate of at least three times higher than other women in Canada, which is huge.
Yeah.
Racism inherent in the Canadian policing and legal system helped Jordan to go relatively unnoticed. The people he was killing were perceived as less important.
Yeah, so frustrating.
Germans have a derogatory term for people considered less than human. It's Untermensch. The exact translation is underman, and it means an inferior person or a subhuman. We all know how that line of thinking went for many people in Europe in the 1930s and 40s.
Sadly, we do.
Yeah, of whom I share some heritage with.
Yeah.
Jordan's crimes happened before the public was outraged by the 49 murders of mostly Indigenous women by Robert Willie Picton. We all know that guy, a pig farmer from Port Coquitlam. After more public outcry over Picton's crimes in 2005, British Columbia's infamous Highway of Tears, a 720-kilometer-long stretch of road between Prince George and Prince Rupert, got its own RCMP task force called EPANA. It was set up to investigate the 21 either murdered or missing, mostly Indigenous women along that road spanning 1969 until 2011. So, you know, it's unbelievable what we've seen over the years as far as, the more I do this podcast and the more I write and the more I research, I see, this country that we live in has like a horribly racist opinion of Indigenous people.
Yep. Yep.
And honestly, like me doing this has changed the way I think about Indigenous folks.
Yeah.
Like, holy crap. I didn't realize that, how desperate this problem is until I really started digging into it.
Yeah, I'm fortunate that through a lot of things I photograph, I have a good chunk of Indigenous friends, and through social media, they've made me very aware.
Yeah.
You know, I've become very aware of the stats that they have had to suffer.
Yeah, for through. Sure.
And it is our country.
Yeah.
Yeah, as much as I like to say that we, you know, don't have that kind of
it's embarrassing
ostracizing or treatment of certain citizens. It's there, and it's sad, and it angers me.
I don't think we'll ever cover Robert Picton. I honestly don't.
I don't
think we have anything to add to the story.
Yeah.
Christy from Canadian True Crime Podcast recently did a four-episode coverage of that.
Oh, wow. That's great.
It's she put a lot of effort into that.
Oh, so, it's a huge case.
Yeah, for sure. So we'll link to that. And as well, the last podcast on the left, they were here for a live show at the rickshaw where you...
Oh, were they?
Yeah, where you did your photographing the other night. Yeah. And
well, I wasn't photographing.
Or where you were attending. Okay, but... were given Stevie Cameron's book on the farm about Willie Picton, and they read it and were really interested in the case. So they also did a multi-episode coverage of the case as well. So these two podcasts have covered the case to death.
Yeah.
Like they, I don't need to, I don't think we need to get into it.
No.
I mean, even though I remember, when all that was going on, Willie Picton's farm was behind the Home Depot that Carol and I used to shop at when we lived in Maple Ridge. And one time we went to the Home Depot when all this was going on, and we didn't realize that it was there. And we noticed all these news trucks and everything around the Home Depot. And we walked around the back, and I asked one of the news folks, well, what's going on? And then I looked, and it's like, holy crap, that's what I've been seeing on the news. That's Willie Picton's farm right there.
Yeah, but I agree, though. I don't think we need to do our own podcast on it. But, I mean, you know, I'm sure it'll come up in conversation. Yeah. It'll be referenced, you know, often and whatnot. But
I do want to do The Highway of Tears, or at least part of it. Cody Legibakov, who was a serial killer along the Highway of Tears. Yep. I know his uncle.
Yep.
Larry.
You've mentioned to me.
Yeah. So I kind of want to cover that case because I've always found that fascinating. As far as the Highway of Tears itself, like there's so many speculations as to who it was. Like there was a serial killer in the States and his name escapes me at the moment.
Yeah.
But he admitted to killing women in Canada and he was a truck driver along that route.
I actually, a friend of mine who is deceased, and he worked for a bit before working with me with the RCMP, and his job was he worked on the task force for Highway of Tears. Like his job was to digitize the reports and everything.
Was that Kevin?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
He digitized reports and everything like that. But he would, when you'd ask him about it, his eyes would be like,
yeah.
But he would never say anything.
So Canada is taking steps to better the treatment of Indigenous women and girls. They've set up a national task force called the Independent National Inquiry of Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls, including... Two-spirited, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered, and queer. They set that up on December 8th, 2015. That's when the government announced it anyway. Mm-hmm. And two-spirited, I don't know if people know what that is. But apparently that's a Native person who believes that they are both male and female.
Oh, okay. So they have their own...
Yeah, it's like a transgender...
Okay. Yeah.
I don't want to – please don't send me tweets about this because I don't fully understand it. But I'm not trying to be disrespectful. I just don't understand it.
Yeah, I think it's actually – I really like the phrase.
Two-spirit. Yeah, I kind of like that too.
Yeah.
So we'll link to the inquiry's interim report in our show notes from the report titled – Our women and girls are sacred. They chose 7 values to guide their work at the National Inquiry. They are honesty, open-mindedness, openness, inclusivity, compassion, courage, fairness, and respect. And these values guide every decision that they make. And some of the inquiry's initial recommendations include a rejection of the colonial frameworks that allow for this kind of systemic racism. A yes. That really hit me when I was reading about that. A spirit of reconciliation, healing, education, and justice, as well as it calls for the restoration of the dignity and respect of what it calls our stolen sisters. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's a lot to read in that report, and it's pretty excellent.
Mm.
Perhaps if Jordan's crimes were taken more seriously and investigated more thoroughly, the later crimes committed by Robert Picton and the Predators along the Highway of Tears may have been avoided, at least in part. But it was a different, less enlightened time in Canadian history.
Yeah.
Residential schools, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Regardless, Canada is making steps, however halting, to ensure this does not happen again. Marie Clements, a playwright in Canada here, wrote a play called The Unnatural and Accidental Women, and it highlights what the women went through at Gilbert Paul Jordan's hands, pouring booze down their throats and watching them die. So much of the research for this episode came from actual court documents and by way of Harriet Fox's book that I mentioned earlier, The Alcohol Murders. And we'll link to that on our show notes on Amazon so you can pick it up for yourself if you want. So, yeah, that's episode 15. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, a case I'd never heard of.
Yeah.
Or a criminal I've never heard of it.
But he was pretty prolific in, as far as criminality went.
Yeah.
Like, he was a nonstop criminal from the time he was 18 years old until he passed away at 74, I believe.
I think it said 73 or something. But, these, all murder cases are powerful and sad. But I really... I do get a sense of anger when the less fortunate are preyed upon. You know, that whole... when I was down in that neighborhood yesterday, I was one of the people I was with, I was talking about how I actually feel a lot safer. Like, I've gone walking down that street at 2 a.m. with a lot of money and camera gear on me, and I actually felt fine despite being surrounded by less fortunate people. And the reality of it is they're more harm to themselves than they are anybody else.
Yep.
And it's just sad to see that exploited for a criminal activity or anything.
Yeah.
It's frustrating for me.
Absolutely. So that's it for this episode. Before we go, we want to give some shout outs to some new Patreon patrons, which I'm amazed. It keeps growing. Thank you to Ashley from Charlottetown, originally from my hometown in Bridgewater. Much appreciated, Ashley. She and I did not know each other there, but it's kind of cool that somebody knows the places that I'm talking about when I mention Bridgewater.
Yeah, super thank you, Ashley.
Yeah. Thank you to Andrea W. from Stony Creek, Ontario, a.k.a. Carol's cousin, Andrea. Much appreciated, Andrea. She is a lover of all things crime and criminal, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So she's kind of our target audience in a way.
We appreciate you, Andrea.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you to Red P from Derbyshire, all the way in the UK.
Man, I love hearing that. I love hearing overseas.
Yeah, right.
Listeners,
that anybody is listening.
Yeah.
Thank you to Jennifer Y from Edmonton. I guess we've been forgiven there. also, the guy who told me to F off last week.
Yeah,
he was kidding.
I figured as
he
much,
and I have had a really good conversation, and it turns out that he's a pretty cool guy.
I would imagine,
and I'm glad I didn't react too terribly to it because I felt kind of like, I wonder if this guy's trolling me a little bit.
Yeah.
And he was. Yeah. So good on you.
Good to hear.
Yeah. And also thanks to Stephanie B and her last name. I'm not going to say what it was. It sounds like it's Danish or something. So maybe she's from Denmark. Pretty cool. Thank you so much for your pledges. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Really, so, really means a lot.
So I'm planning my first episode of my first mini episode for Patreon coming up. It looks like I should be ready to go maybe next week.
Woo-hoo.
But I'm doing something with the 36 Times podcast from Nova Scotia in early March. And they're going to be, we'll be co-releasing something on our Patreons, which is going to be kind of cool.
Very awesome.
Yeah, so keep your peepers peeled for that. If you want to donate, you can do so at patreon.com/darkputin, or send us some money, donut money, at PayPal at our email address, darkpoutinepodcast@gmail.com.
Any $50,000 takers yet?
Nobody gave us $50,000.
I'm shocked. I keep taking out expensive loans and stuff, assuming that
as long as they're not in my name, I don't give a shit what you do.
Yeah, you're probably gonna need to give a shit then.
Oh yeah. No.
Yeah. Forged.
Mike Brown.
Yeah, forged documents.
You leave the E off though.
No. I added an extra E.
Brownie.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Anyway, you can check out our website at www.darkpoutine.com for show notes and other cool stuff. If you have any notes, story ideas, questions, comments, or just want to say hi, you can reach us via email at, as I mentioned, darkpoutinepodcast@gmail.com. You can leave us an internet voicemail from your PC at darkpoutine.com/message, and we'll play it on a future episode. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and just search for Dark Poutine and tell your friends about us. Especially fun is our closed Facebook group. We're having tons of fun there. Lots of people are joining.
It's awesome.
Yeah, we're active there too, and you can meet us and some other cool listeners who will introduce you to other really great podcasts as well. We have like a lot of other podcast hosts there. We have Beck and Tyler from Minds of Madness are there, and Erica from Southern Fried True Crime. I always say that, Crew Crime. Why do I stutter at that one? And Jamie from the Murderish podcast is there. Yeah. Jessica from the Asian Madness podcast is there. Listen to me, all these shout outs I'm giving to these.
I'd say join our group more so for them than us. They're far more, all the fans there are far more interesting.
Everybody's pretty entertaining. Yeah. Well, I'm entertaining. Scott is not. Oh, no.
I'm glaring.
I'm glaring. That's a glare.
I'm hilarious. And the world knows it.
Sure.
Hilarious.
You can subscribe to us on your favorite podcast directory, like iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, or at our host, Podbean.
Hilarious.
Lots of you have left 5-star reviews and comments on iTunes. We appreciate each and every one. We are still at 4.98 stars out of 5. So that one damn 4-star.
It makes me think, like,
You have not.
What the hell? Okay, I got to get on that.
Exactly.
I'll give it a 2.
Don't do it. Every little bit helps.
2.5. I like the half is Scott, the Scott half.
Thanks for letting us fill your ears with some more dark poutine, and forget to be a good egg and not a bad apple.
Have an awesome night, folks.
Bye.